95.3 WBCK. Welcome to the Cowardly Gardener Show. Everything from azaleas and asparagus to Zenobia and ZZ plants. If it's growing in the Battle Creek area, Bob Coward's here to tackle your question. Here's your host, Bob Coward.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
WBCK, it's Bob Coward, the Cowardly Gardener. He's taking your calls at 441-9595. That number again is 441-9595. I'm Brad Carpenter, pushing the buttons and just sort of filling in some dead air when we don't have any callers. So give us a call, 441-9595, and good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Well, what's new in the world of gardening and landscaping? Anything going on, I suppose?
Well, there's all kinds of stuff. I mean, stuff doesn't stop growing just because, you know, we take the week off or whatever.
Is that how that works?
Well, you know, the big thing this week, and I hope you got your button ready. You got your button ready over there?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I can honestly say I think after that hurricane came through this week, we're definitely not in a drought.
Okay, well, I was going to ask about that because...
Depending on where you were, it could have been anywhere from 3 to 8 inches. I saw reports of 7 inches in the Athens area. And
wow.
I believe at the Battle Creek Airport, they had a little over 3 inches. And I know Vicksburg got close to 8 inches.
Wow.
So there's a lot of places where we got some serious, serious rain. Good for this ground, and of course the grass and the weeds and everything are growing absolutely quickly now, and especially with today and tomorrow going to be in the 90s and high humidity. What's going to happen, though, is because of that, we're going to start seeing a lot of diseases. Last week we had somebody call about blight on tomatoes and diseases and want to know about spraying fungicides, so I think tonight would be possibly a good night to go out and do that. I've seen just the starting symptoms of blight last week on one of my tomato plants. But I think with the heat and humidity, I woke up this morning and went out, and I mean, it is just absolutely sopping, soaking wet out there right now. I mean, you go out in the grass and your feet are going to be wet. So it really, really is wet out there. And one of the things that I think we're going to see happen is, on your tomatoes, when you have a lot of moisture like that and then the heat and humidity, they really grow fast, which can be good and can be bad. But one of the things that I think we're going to see happen is I think you're going to see a lot of cracking on the tomatoes. Some of those bigger varieties, the beefsteaks and some of those, the cherry, not so much, but some of those bigger varieties may start to crack. And what people may want to consider doing is if you have a bunch of those tomatoes and within the next week to 10 days, you'll probably start to see some of that cracking occur. You may want to pick some of those off, even though they're green. Take some of the worst cracked ones off that plant. Now, what that's going to do is that is going to slow down your harvest. You may, you know, not get a tomato as early as you'd like to get. However, those cracked ones, a lot of times what will happen is those cracks will develop, and then that tomato will actually start to rot from the top down.
Oh, no.
Which really is a problem. So you may not want to necessarily remove every single one that's cracked, but maybe go in there and just look and see how they are. And if you got some that really got some big cracks in them over the next, you know, 10 days or so, you may want to take some of those off and see, you know, if you can get some of those that are not cracked on there. And that'll probably make it a lot better. You're going to find, too, that you're going to start seeing fungus on your cucumbers and your pumpkins and your melons and that kind of thing. So if you're going to do any spraying, use your fungicide close to dark, because that's when the diseases work, and you'll probably find that's going to slow that down. Thing to remember about fungicides is they always work better as a preventative rather than a curative, so you don't want to wait until all the leaves are brown or white or really bad and then say, oh, I'm going to spray now, because that's not going to do a heck of a lot of good. You want to do it before you have a major problem with blight and diseases and all that kind of thing, and then that way you slow that thing down, so you got a couple weeks to really get a handle on it.
Well, Bob, we have a caller. It's Ellen. She has a question about poison ivy. Go ahead, Ellen.
Good morning, gentlemen. I have some beautiful plants that grow along my house. And last year we had poison ivy start crawling up the back of the house, in back of those plants. I don't want to spray it with something and then have it fall down on my plants that I've spent money and time on. How can I get rid of that poison ivy?
Put on long sleeves and rubber gloves and go in there and pull it out.
Well, the root system is behind. I can't get to the root system.
Well,
it's going to just break off.
If you can go in there and clip it off and leave just a little piece of it sticking out, you can take and clip that off, remove what's left of the vine, and then that little root piece that's sticking out, if you're very careful, you can go in there with some brush killer, put that on a foam rubber paintbrush, and just dab a little of that on that fresh cut, and that'll travel down and kill the root of that poison ivy. Now, having said that, chances are good there may be seeds in there and it may re-sprout, so you're not going to probably do this one time and think it's going to solve your problem. Chances are good it's coming back, because there may be some in the neighborhood, and this may be a spot where birds like to land, and when they land, they poop, and the next thing you know, you got poison ivy growing there again. So this is something you're going to want to be vigilant about.
Okay. Now, I was listening, and you were talking about the cracked tomatoes.
Yes.
Are they still good enough to make fried green tomatoes out of?
Absolutely. There's nothing necessarily wrong with them, and you can leave them on there if they're cracked. But the problem is, and we've seen this in other years, those cracks will, as the tomato starts to ripen, those will just turn kind of moldy and gray, and you'll end up with the tomato getting rotten probably before it's totally ripe. And then you get fruit flies and everything else. So a lot of times if you take, and you don't have to take every single one off that's cracked, but if you got some that are, and I think you'll start to see it by about this time next weekend, if you got some that are really showing a lot of cracking on the top of those things, those may be the ones you want to get out of there. They'd be perfectly fine for green tomatoes or green salsa or anything like that. Not that they're not edible. It's just as they ripen, those things are going to come back and start to get moldy, and then you're going to end up probably throwing them away.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right.
You guys have a wonderful day.
All right, you too.
He's Bob Coward, the Cowardly Gardener, taking your questions. And coming up, we have Dave. He has a question about Miracle-Gro. 95.3 WBCK. It's Bob Coward, the Cowardly Gardener. And Bob, currently we have three people waiting to talk to you.
Now, do you suppose, before we do that, do you suppose that both those songs were played on the same guitar?
Well, I think it could have been, tell us the story on that one there, Bob.
Well, the one is from Jimi Hendrix, Manic Depression. And of course, he set his guitar on fire on the Monterey Pop Festival, and very famous video of him doing that. And then after he walked off stage, he handed the guitar to Frank Zappa, and Frank Zappa played it until the day he died. So we go from Frank Zappa to...
Yeah, Frank Zappa, that record scratch, that was Frank Zappa off from one of his albums. So, they go together. That Frank Zappa ended up with that burned-up guitar.
Yeah, I saw him in concert, and he was telling all about it, how he had new pickups put on it and made it so it was strung right because Jimmy played left-handed.
Oh, yeah, you'd have to restring it.
Yep.
Hey, Bob, we have Dave on the line right now. He wants to know about Miracle-Gro. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, Bob, excuse me. I have 13 baskets hanging, and I feed them with Miracle-Gro and a gallon of water with that little, the small end of the cup. But how much of that gallon should go into each one of these things? I don't want to kill them overfeeding them.
Well, if you're using the small scooper, normally it's about three of those in a gallon of water. So if you're using that at one scoop per gallon, you can water every single day with that, because that's just about a third strength solution.
Thought he had that, but one small scoop, but what, the big end?
Yeah, the big end per gallon, generally for normal feeding. But the small scoop would be for just light feeding every day, basically. If you put that in and do that every single day, that's perfectly fine. Because, like, if you go to one of the greenhouses, they actually, when they water their plants as they're growing them, they actually have an injector that injects that type of fertilizer into the water. So they're watering every single day with a half strength or third strength of liquid fertilizer like that. So if you use that small end and water every day with that, that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, well, I'd rather use the big end and do it 7 to 10 days.
That'd be fine, too. Do it about once a week with the larger size scoop, and you should be good to go.
How much of that gallon goes to each pot?
Well, once you pour it in and it starts running out the bottom, then you're good.
Okay.
It depends on the size of the basket. It may be a quart or it may be a gallon. I don't know. It depends on the size of the pot you got. But it's going to be basically once the water starts running out the bottom, you can quit because you're just wasting it after that.
Yeah, good to go. Okay. Very good. Let's talk about Molex. I put down Molex this morning. I had mold coming out yesterday all over the place.
Well, they had their babies about a month ago, so the babies are basically getting kicked out of the area. So their activity is going crazy right now. So you will find you're probably going to have more activity in the next month rather than less unless you take care of them with that.
All right, sir. Thank you.
All right.
Good
luck.
Day.
You too.
Yep.
Well, Bob, we have Ron on the line. He has a question on how to get rid of horseradish. So, Ron, you want to get rid of your horseradish and not chop it up and use it?
Well, when you chop it up, you better be careful where you throw what you chopped up, because it's going to grow there, too. I've been careless with it, and I cut some of it off. Just keep it cut off. Others I've covered up with a tarp, and I don't know if there's anything else I can do.
Well, you can certainly dig it out or cover it up like you said. As long as the leaves are not exposed, those roots will eventually shrivel up and die. If you wanted to use a herbicide, which you may or may not want to use, you could use something like 2,4-D. That would be best used in the fall time because that is a translocated herbicide, meaning it's absorbed through the foliage, travels down and kills the root. So if you did that in September, probably.
That's a pretty good idea.
That would probably knock that down pretty readily, and you would probably do a pretty good job of knocking it out.
Because when you dig it, there's usually a tip down there somewhere. And
absolutely.
On my grapes, I've got some out here that just grow like gangbusters. You got three times the foliage they need. I hardly ever put in any grapes on. Usually the leanest ones will have the more grapes, but now I've got some grapes that got some black spots. I've got three different rows of them, and they're different kinds. I know one thing, I've got the Japanese beetle to deal with. Then there's a little black bug there, and it's on these preformed grapes. It's kind of like what you see black spot on leaves, a different thing, you know. Is there anything I could spray on those?
Well, with that, what you basically are getting on the grapes is brown rot. Which is similar to black spot, but it's different because it's specifically for grapes. The thing about spraying grapes for brown rot is you got to start when those leaves break out and are about a quarter inch, size of a quarter, maybe a dime. Uh-huh. So we're talking way back in April, probably tax day. That's when you should have started spraying those grapes with a fungicide, something like Doconil or something like that. You need to keep after it. The thing to remember with fungicides is they work best as a preventative, not as a curative. So if you do three or four sprayings between mid-April and 1st of July, you'll have probably pretty good results. If you start spraying now, it probably isn't going to do a darn bit of good because the damage is already done.
It's kind of like if it rains, maybe you spray again then because it washes it off.
Right, and you're going to want to read the label on there. I think depending on the crop, it's usually about 7 to 14 days. So if you can, you find a night when you know it's not going to rain, put it on close to dark because all your funguses work in the nighttime hours. So if you spray that stuff close to dark, it'll stay wet on the plant. And if you can get 2 or 3 days with no rain, that'll probably protect that stuff for 7 to 14 days, maybe longer, depending on how often we get rain. And then you should get pretty good control on that. But like Concord grapes, which are one of the more common ones grown around here, they're pretty famous for getting brown rot. And if you don't get that spraying early, that's when you're going to have your problem. The other part is with that, you said the one grape doesn't get any grapes on it. If you're not pruning them hard enough, you won't get grapes.
Here's the thing I think about it. It's on really rich soil. I happen to think about it. I've tried to grow red raspberries, and they won't even grow. It's just rich and kind of damp there. And I think one of that isn't why I'm piling foliage on top of foliage here. Well, I didn't leave anything on them. I cut them down so doggone hard, but I don't know about pruning in the summer to keep them off the top. Some you might get a handful or a bunch there, about it.
Yeah, and normally what you want to do is you want to prune those things back to two sets of buds from growth that grew this year. So if you look at all the growth that came out this year, next spring, you want to cut that back to two sets of buds on that growth that grew this year and take everything else off, which is typically about 75% of the vine.
Yeah.
And then if you're in a really wet condition like that, that really gets the brown rot going because you constantly have moisture and humidity. So you can go in there and do a little bit of light pruning and allow some airflow in there, take off some of the ones that are growing low or maybe crisscrossing that don't have grapes on them, and that'll allow a little bit more sunlight and airflow in there, which may help with some of that.
Yeah, they stay pretty clean in there as far as it, but see, I didn't leave anything on them, and then I saw some of an Amish place where I saw how they pruned theirs and left a couple of them, and then so that's what I'll do the next time. But it's just always been that way, right in that spot, and you just move them somewhere else.
Well, and that may be the case. You may normally, if you look at where they grow grapes, they do them very similarly to like fruit trees. They grow them on hillsides. The reason being is because they're less susceptible to frost, but they also have, you know, don't have that moisture on them on their feet all the time, so they're not getting that fungus.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
All right.
Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Right. It's Bob Coward, Cowardly Gardener, taking your questions at 441-9595. And coming up, we have Char having a question on rhubarb.
Son of a gun.
WBCK, and in the background we hear Bob and Jim talking away.
Yeah, George is confusing me.
Well, oh, did you say George?
Yeah, I did.
Well, George has a question on this plant, and do you have a... I don't have any background. He's not on the phone, so can't actually talk to him, but... He sent me this picture of some sort of a plant. Do you look at that plant and see any problem?
Well, he's got a picture of tomatoes, and the one is all wilting down. And I do believe by looking at it, it looks to me like it's got either herbicide damage or black walnut damage. Generally, if you have black walnuts in the area, the tomatoes will grow like that.
George, I'm here.
You're there, George? Tell us about this tomato.
Yeah, I don't know. I've got the ones around it are doing really good. And then this one here just seemed to puke over here. I thought it was probably drought and I was going to water it here a week ago. And then we got all this rain and that didn't make any difference. But the other ones are like a jungle. They're 18 inches, 24 inches high. Blooming, and this thing is just dying.
Is there a black walnut nearby?
Well, no more, no closer than any of these other ones.
Well, that's not really a good answer, George.
There could be, yes.
Okay, there could be. That's the answer.
But why are the other ones doing so good?
Well, they haven't got the roots from the black walnut, haven't got over there, or they haven't absorbed enough juglone, which is the poison that the black walnut secretes, to cause them to die yet. But they'll probably do that eventually.
Only the tomatoes will die, or my beans? The beans aren't dying.
Beans aren't affected by it. It's only members of the nightshade family, tomatoes, peppers, and potatoes. Generally, the tomatoes are the most sensitive because they're most sensitive to herbicides and also the juglone. And I've seen this many a time where you'll have one end of a garden where you put some tomatoes in and they're not affected at all. But the other end, if there's tomatoes down there, they grow along fine, and usually right around the 4th of July, all of a sudden, the top of the plant starts wilting and looks like it hasn't had enough moisture. And then basically the thing slowly dies, and usually it'll take a couple weeks before it does, maybe three or four even sometimes, depending on how much juglone's in the soil, and it'll eventually kill that plant.
So another year I'll want to flip the end of the garden and put the beans and the sweet corn in here.
Well, you want your tomatoes and peppers and potatoes at least, and I say this again, at least 100 feet away from a black walnut.
The tree?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought this was a good 100 feet or close to it, but okay, that answers the question. I guess I won't count on getting any tomatoes.
And if you have any leaves that get in there, or if you got squirrels burying the nuts or any of that kind of thing, that adds right to the soil. So that's where your problem lies.
Something is chewing off the top of my cucumbers. Any suggestions whether, I don't think it's deer. Probably rabbits, would they eat cucumbers?
Rabbits will eat it. Last year I had a woodchuck get up on my deck and eat mine, so it could very well be a woodchuck.
Well, there's a cure for the woodchuck. It's,
well, yeah,
22 caliber.
Well, that could work.
Little lead poisoning.
Yeah.
I think they're good. I think they're good if you cook them right, George.
I heard they're as good as possum.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I have to go buy some tomatoes at the market then.
Well, and what you might consider doing is growing some in a container, and then that way that prevents that problem with the black walnut.
Well, thank you much. I thought maybe, you know, the wife held it off and just didn't want to admit it or something.
Well, the only other option would be is if it was sprayed with 2,4-D, but that doesn't look like 2,4-D damage to me. It looks like juglone poisoning.
Well, no, this has not had 2,4-D on it.
Well, then it's black walnut problems.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, very much for relieving my stress on this, and now I'll have a stress of buying tomatoes.
All right, good luck.
Well, Bob, we have Shar on the line with a question on rhubarb. Go ahead, Shar.
Thank you. I have a roll of rhubarb that I have had for quite a few years. I take care of it, but it really doesn't need a lot of care, and it comes back every year. This year it came on really good in the spring, and I had a couple of pies off from it, and all of a sudden it's all wilted down and dying, and I don't think there's much saving it. My grandma had a row of it for, I'll bet you, 40 years, and it never really did this. What happened to it? Do you have any ideas?
Well, there, a couple things can happen with rhubarb. Rhubarb is a cool season crop. So sometimes when it gets very hot, like we've had over the last month or so, it'll start to kind of turn yellow and wilt up and not look so good. They do get crown rot. So if it's in a spot where water collects a lot and it has had water on it, because of course we had all this rain this week, but if in other times we've had some pretty heavy downpours, if it gets standing water around the crown, that can cause crown rot, which can maybe not kill it, but certainly damage it. Do you take and top dress it in the fall with manure or compost or anything like that?
Yes, and I also got some manure that had a lot of, I want to call it shavings of straw from a man down the road on his farm. And I put that, kind of edged it along here a couple weeks ago. But it's looking really bad. I don't know that it will even come back. I don't know what's going on with it because I've never had to do much care for it. It doesn't, it gets sun. It's not in a wet area by any means. I don't water it because I live out in the country and can't reach it with water. So all the water it ever has gotten is just from our natural weather. And I'm kind of upset about it because I'm one that likes rhubarb crunch and things like that.
Well, what you might do is just probably isn't going to be much of a loss to you either way if you do it, is go out there and mix up like a 5-gallon bucket of Miracle-Gro. Now, you want to put the one large scoop per gallon, so 5 large scoops in a 5-gallon bucket, and pour that right around that and pour it slow so it has time to soak in. You can pour it on the leaves because it'll also absorb through the leaves. And just see what happens with that. Do that this weekend and do it next weekend. Rhubarb a lot of times in the summer will kind of yellow up and shrivel down because it gets so hot and sunny and that
kind of thing. That's kind of what it's doing. It looks like almost no leaves even and now because they've shrunk way down.
Yeah, and what typically happens is it'll do that basically in June and July. It'll kind of shrivel up and dry up and then come back again with a vengeance back in mid-August to early October. So if you give it a shot of fertilizer, liquid fertilizer over the next couple of weeks, you may find that thing will perk back up and come back. A lot of times with rhubarb, it looks like it's died, but that root is still alive in there. So if you give it a little fertilizer, you may find that'll bring it back.
Is Miracle, this is a stupid question because I'm not a farmer. Is Miracle-Gro just, there's just Miracle-Gro. It's not for vegetables or fruit or flowers because I have some for my flowers. Can that be used then?
You could use that one. The one for flowers just has higher phosphorus, which is the middle number. The standard Miracle-Gro is a 14-14-14, which is a balanced fertilizer. Mm-hmm. But the one that is for flowers has a little more phosphorus in it, but it still has, I believe it's like 18% nitrogen and like 40% phosphorus and like 15% potash. You're just getting a little bit higher phosphorus content. So if you got some of that flower one, go ahead and use it.
I also have bought, haven't used it yet, but I looked in my Better Homes and Garden book about it, and they said to put like 12-12-12 on it. And I bought some. They're the granules, of course. You would know that.
Yep.
Is that okay to use?
You could use that, but I think if it were me, I would use the Miracle-Gro first and then use the 12-12-12 when we get a little bit closer to fall.
What about putting on the grass clippings? I don't spray my grass or anything out here. I have 3 acres of it. So
I would definitely not do that.
You would not put the grass around it.
No, because number one, that's just going to make grass in your patch and make it worse.
I know.
The problem with grass clippings is as they decay, especially if you layer them more than about an inch thick, as they decay, they heat up like wet hay in a barn and they can actually burn the plant. They can cook the root and cook the top. So if you've been doing that, don't do that anymore.
Okay, but the manure doesn't harm it then if I can put some of that on, say,
if it's rotten,
before winter or next spring.
It in the fall is the best time, and you want it to be rotted. If you're getting like chicken manure or something that's fresh, that can be really hot too. So you don't want something that's real super hot on it because that can actually burn it.
Okay, well, I'm hoping to save it because I got these plants from my grandmother, and she's been long gone, and I just love it, and some of the neighbors like to come and get it, too, so I'm hoping to save it.
I think you should have pretty good luck.
Okay, thank you for your information.
All right.
He's Bob Coward, the Cowardly Gardener. Coming up, we have Shar with a question. That was Shar. We have Carol in Bedford, and she has a question about black walnut poisoning. 95.3 WBCK is Bob Coward, the Cowardly Gardener. You can call him at 441-9595. That's 441-9595. And boy, the callers have been keeping our call screener, Mr. Jim Meade, quite busy this morning.
That's good. We like to see some work out of him because every so often he has to take off to these call screener conferences and be gone. So, you know, when we can get the work out of him, that's good. You know, one of the things that's happened this week is tonight in Florida, the Best of All Worlds tour with Sammy Hagar and Michael Anthony and Joe Satriani and Jason Bonham starts in Florida. And so they've been showing them practicing, and they've been playing. It's almost like Name That Tune. They'll play, show a little clip of them playing some song, whatever it is, and then you have to guess what it is and what it's going to be on the set list. So they've had all that. So,
well, I'll make you excited. So
I've been watching them all, and I know a lot of the songs.
Yeah, I heard Jason Bonham is drumming for them on this tour, and he's great. You know, he's the son of Bonham that was the drummer for Led Zeppelin. So
that's right. And I actually saw him. They were at the Fire Keepers back in last year, whenever it was. And so he was there. But it was funny because he was saying in the concert, he said, you know, I've been working with these guys for a while, and I'm trying to teach them how to speak English, and he's been having a hard time on it.
Yeah, I heard that was a good show.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be a good show coming up at Pine Knob.
Well, Bob, we have Carol from Bedford with a question about black walnut poisoning. What do you got going on over there in Bedford, Carol?
Well, let me give you a little history first. We had gardens years ago. We had walnut trees. We found out from you about the fact that the walnut trees will, you know, eventually kill the tomato plants. Okay, so we cut them all down. We treated our soil. We kind of planted corn to kind of neutralize the soil. We didn't have a garden for about another 7 years. Okay, now we got another garden again. And you mentioned something about the poison that comes from the walnut trees may be affecting my pepper plants. I wouldn't think that I would have any of that in my soil after all these years. The trees have been gone for years. I have no more.
Well, it's a good possibility that it's gone. What are your pepper plants doing?
Well, they come on this spring, jalapenos. They come on this spring, and they were gorgeous. I had great big peppers. Okay, then we had that cold weather.
Yes.
And now they're just kind of just sitting there.
Well, you're probably not growing them on landscape fabric, are you?
No.
Well, next year, that's what I want you to do.
I know, I've done that before. You told us that before.
Well, okay. Well, you know, the thing I would tell you about peppers, and I grow peppers every year. This year I didn't put any in the ground. I got them in pots, but I've grown them in the ground. And I would tell you that you will, if not double, probably triple or quadruple your production on your peppers by putting them on fabric. And the general rule, in my opinion, is the hotter the pepper they are, the more heat they need in that soil. They want an 85 degree soil temperature.
Yeah.
Now, in Michigan, the soil doesn't ever reach 85 degrees. So what you want to do is put that landscape fabric down a few days, if not a week or two, before you plant your peppers. And then don't cover the fabric up with mulch or anything like that. You want it exposed to that black, so it'll heat that soil up and keep that warm. And those peppers will take right off. The other thing about peppers is they have fairly decent-sized leaves. They're a fairly heavy feeder of nitrogen. So if you're not feeding them with nitrogen on a pretty regular basis, whether you fertilized them with 12-12-12 or you're feeding them with Miracle-Gro or whatever, they're not going to grow very rapidly either. My pepper, I have Serranos and Poblanos. I've been hitting those about every week with some Miracle-Gro, and they are setting fruit like crazy, and they've about doubled in size in the last 2 weeks. So that's really the problem with peppers in this area, is you really need to grow them on fabric. In years past, I've grown them just straight in the ground, no fabric, and literally they might get a foot tall. I put them on fabric, and I've had poblanos that are 4 or 5 feet tall and literally just, you know, 3, 4, 5 times the production.
Last year I had peppers coming out. I had to give them away. I mean, I had baskets full of peppers this
year. I would tell you, I just watched Channel 3 News this morning, and the question on there for trivia was, how many 90-degree days did we have in July last year?
A lot.
How many have we had this year?
Well, we're just getting into them.
Exactly. And what did I say about peppers? They want heat. Last year, there was 8 days, he said, in June that were in the 90s, and then there was also 8 days in July. So far this year in July, we've had 3. And okay. That's what they want, is that heat. And if you don't give them that heat, they're not going to do much.
Okay. All right.
They need that fertilizer, and they need that heat. So next year, get your area prepared. What I would recommend to you is get yourself some good compost and put that in there either right before you plant or do it in the fall, and then put that fabric down at least a few days early, if not a week early. And then when you go to plant those peppers in there, don't feel like you got to put them in, you know, end of April, because that's not going to do much. The colder it is, they just sit there. So you want to probably do those things right around Memorial Day on that hot fabric, and then keep them watered with some Miracle-Gro, or make sure you're putting a nitrogen source on them, because those things will grow very, very rapidly and produce very well if those conditions are right.
Okay. Well, I grew these in the basement to start with. Are they going to take some time in order to reestablish after being in the basement with artificial light and everything?
Well, the thing about doing them in the basement is, and peppers are really super slow to sprout. I mean, if you start the seed, it usually takes 10 to 14 days for the seed to germinate, and then it seems like it takes 2 more weeks for those things to grow their second set of leaves. I almost tell people a lot of times what you want to do is run those on a timer, probably 18 to 20 hours a day, and then make sure you're feeding those with a half-rate Miracle-Gro solution while you got them in your basement, and have that timer on about 18 to 20 hours, because they need that light and they need that bottom. If you can do it, put bottom heat on them, because that's what they need to get going.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they were beautiful when I put them in the garden, and like I said, they produced really good. I had 2 or 3 pickings, you know, of nice, great, big jalapenos, and now they're just kind of sitting there.
Yeah, you need the heat, and you need the nitrogen.
Okay, well, I put fertilizer on them, but I'll do it again.
All right,
It's Bob Coward, the Cowardly Gardener. Coming up, Bryce has a question on white flies.
Good morning. I'm a bank robber. Please don't panic. Just hand over all the money.
This is a lingerie shop, sir.
Fine. Well, what have you got?
We've got corsets, stockings, suspender belts, tights, bras, slips, petticoats, knickers, socks, and garters, sir.
Fine. No large quantities of money in safes?
No, sir.
No piles of cash in easy-to-carry bags?
No, sir.
Fine. Well, just a pair of panties then, please.
WBCK is Bob Coward, the Cowardly Gardener. Give us a call at 441-9595. That number again is 441-9595. Bob, we have Bryce on the line, and he has a question on white flies. Go ahead, Bryce.
First of all, what were we just listening to, by the way?
Well, that was Monty Python, the bank robber. Yeah, we like to get a little comedy on here, so I threw Monty Python on.
Gotcha. I have been noticing this year, and maybe it's because I was living in the woods this summer instead of in the suburbs, but these little fluffy white flies, they're real small, and they look like they kind of look like they got wool on them, and just lots and lots of them the last couple weeks. And I wondered if this is something unusual this year, or if it's just because I'm around in the woods this year.
Are they actually, if you touch the plant, do they actually fly and then land back on the plant, or do they just look like a piece of cotton and sit there?
So far I'm only noticing them flying around when I'm out working in the driveway on my car. They're just floating through the air all over the place. I've never really noticed them on plants, but I don't have a garden right now.
Well, if they're not on plants, then they're probably not a problem. There's all different kinds of different insects that may be available. There may be mayflies or something like that that are out there. So probably nothing that you have to worry about. Whiteflies, typically, the insect one that causes damage on your plants, those typically you find those in a greenhouse setting, although there have been years I've seen them outside. Obviously, they come from the outside inside. Usually you'll find the white fly that is eating your plants on the undersurface of the leaves. And if you kind of tap the plant, they'll fly up for a minute and then come back down and go back on the underside of the plant. And what they typically do is just suck the life out of the plant. Those you can treat with an insecticide. But if you're not having anything like that, I wouldn't waste my time on any insecticide. Probably just some sort of a fly or mayfly or something like that.
When I Google it, it looks like a woolly aphid.
There are woolly aphids. Now, those don't normally fly, though. Those are actually going to usually just be attached to the plant. Mealybugs are like that, too. They just stay. They're a cottony mass that'll stay attached to the plant. So if these things are actually flying around, they're probably something that's not a problem that you're going to have to worry about.
Are you seeing them out there where you live?
I haven't seen any of those, but that's not to say they aren't out there. I mean, I live on kind of a top of a hill at a sand dune. So for me, generally, you know, unless it's something that really likes those type of conditions, I don't normally see a lot of stuff like that that likes that kind of moist, humid conditions because I live on top of a sand dune. My backyard is kind of a sunken spot, and I may get some issues with moisture and fungus in those areas, but the most of my yard is pretty high and dry.
Gotcha, gotcha. And as far as rhubarb, is rhubarb completely done for the season? You were saying it's more of a cool season crop?
No, I really, you know, you're just about at the end of picking for now, but a lot of times that stuff will come back on in the fall, and in September and early October, you can go in and do another picking on it.
Oh, great. I look forward to that. All right, thank you so much.
All right, thanks for the call.
He's Bob Coward, the Cowardly Gardener. Coming up, George has a question on hostas. .3 WBCK is Bob Coward, the Cowardly Gardener. Bob, we have George on the line, and he has a question on hostas. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, Bob, I'm calling about my hostas. I've lived in the same spot for 34 years, and they've really flourished and really grown big over the years. My concern is now the last 3 years, they're not doing nothing. I mean, I've moved them many a times. They've been deer ate them up, and I cut them down. They grow back and be good. But for the last 3 years, they're not growing like they used to. They're just staying puny. Do you think they're too old or spent, and I need to invest in different hostas, or this what could be the problem?
Nah, normally with hostas, as long as they're provided with some shade, they usually prefer some shade, and they like a rich organic soil. Usually you can have those things last for centuries, quite honestly. One thing I would tell you is, though, hostas have a pretty good size root to them. Most of the soils in this area come back low in potash, which is the third number on the fertilizer bag. So I would probably tell you want to get some sort of a fertilizer that has a higher last number. Flower Tone is an organic that you can put on them. That may even help keep the deer away a little bit because it's got blood meal in it. And I think if you spread some of that around them right now, that probably would soak in, and by fall, those things would really start to fill in a little bit, and you probably would find that next year, if you put some on or put some more on again early April, late March, you'd probably find that'd make a big difference in how they do.
Okay. I've got some, you said bone meal. I've got some of that, so I can just sprinkle that around it.
Well, bone meal doesn't have any potash in it. What you're looking for is Flower Tone.
Okay, Flower Tone. Okay.
Yep, because all the bone meal is phosphorus, basically. So Flower Tone is a fertilizer. It's got all different types of micronutrients and everything in it, but its last number is a little bit higher, and it's slow release and organic, so it won't burn. So get some of that and put that on.
Well, Bob, the end of another show. So,
well, this is Sammy Hagar month coming up to August 2nd at Pine Knob, and tonight in Palm Beach, Florida, is their first show.
Okay,
guaranteed to be rocking time tonight.